Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and tonight we're going to have this really great conversation. I had the pleasure of meeting Blanca. Gosh, I'm going to go ahead and get Blanca on. Hi, Blanca. Come on, girl.
Hi, I'm here.
Yay, she's here. I met Blanca about 6 weeks ago. I think it was about 6 weeks ago. She came to one of my networking groups, SoCal Christian, and we talked about all kinds of wonderful things with John Maxwell. And, you know, Blanca is a John Maxwell certified life coach. She's a teacher, a mentor. She's certified in the rare leadership, which we're going to be talking about tonight, which I'm really excited about. And she also, in 2015, she created Free to Be Me in her coaching that she does now for people. So we're going to talk a little bit about the coaching, talk a little bit about John Maxwell and rare leadership. And we're going to talk about brain science, too. And the one thing I really loved that when you presented, Blanca, was really getting, I always love it when there's stuff that's science-based that we can be able to look at all this stuff and just go, well, that makes perfect sense that we do that now. And I, you know, it's not, we're pulling it out of thin air. It's something that's really, really cool with all that. So how did you get into wanting to work with John Maxwell?
Well,
or maybe we should say who John, I always, yeah, hold on a second. Okay. I always want to make sure that when people listen to the show, I kind of want to be like the devil's advocate, like I do not know any of this.
Okay.
So who is John Maxwell, and then how did you get attracted to wanting to be doing his work?
Wow. Well, John Maxwell, he is like the top leadership guru in leadership circles. He is an author. He's written many, many books, over 70 books on leadership. And so I chose him because I wanted to go to the cream of the crop. So I went to learn from him. And he has books like on personal growth development as well. So like the 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. He also has, you know, leadership books like, you know, how to communication versus connection. And gosh, there's just so many. There's, you know, put your dreams to the test. There's, you know, oh, one of my favorite is Intentional, Living a Life of Intention. So he's got many, many books. And so he also has a coaching program, and so I chose to go through him. And it's phenomenal. You are a lifetime student, constantly learning on leadership and personal growth development.
That's awesome. So when was the first book, how long ago did you read your first John Maxwell book?
Oh, gosh, many, many years ago.
30 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, well, I started my personal growth journey 40 years ago. And
I've
been a student of personal growth development, leadership development, and just always working on improving myself as far as like in leadership, but also in relationships. I'm more based on relationship because I think, like, if your relationships are healthy and everyone is thriving, it brings joy and peace in your own personal life, and it just makes life much more enjoyable. So I started reading his books and then decided in 2015 I got certified with John Maxwell to be a life and life coach through his program, and also a mentor, but also even just teaching his leadership principles. And so it's been
That's
a
so great,
great journey.
Yeah, and it just, it's probably a never-ending journey because he's got that, that next book coming out.
Oh, I know. I mean, yeah.
It makes me stop and think about his writing. Yeah, he must have this habit of just sitting down and cranking out an hour a day, or who knows, you know what I mean, when it comes to stuff like that. I know some writers, I think of, are you familiar with Wayne Dyer? You know Wayne Dyer at all?
No, I've heard of him.
Wayne,
haven't studied him.
Yeah, he when he was in self development stuff like that for gosh at least 30 years, 30-40 years, and he would go away for a couple weeks. He would go I think about every 6 to 8 weeks he would go away for like a week or two, and he'd write a book.
Yeah, you
he'd
know,
just take a
I
whole week, a week and a half, and he'd write a book. Yeah,
some people have a gift for it. I know that John makes it a habit every day at 5 a.m. he writes. And what many people don't know is that he was actually a pastor. Over, he had his church was out here in San Diego, a very large church. And then he felt called by God to go out into the world and become, teach more on leadership and personal development. And he's been doing that ever since. And he's like really successful at it all over the world. And he wanted to multiply himself, so that's why he started the coaching program. And now there's thousands of coaches everywhere. But yeah,
that's fun when you guys get together.
Oh my gosh, it's thousands when we get together, you know. And so
it takes a convention hall to get everybody together, right? Yeah.
Yes, that's the only time we're all together, you know. And it goes through a year. And but no, it's been really, really good. I love one of his books. It's Everyone Communicates, You Connect. And one of the things is that we're always, many people, you know, we're always talking, but are we connecting? And connection is really key. And I do love that book because it's also about relationship and making connections with people. And whether you're a parent or whether you're in business, you are leading somebody. Somebody's watching you, and you're leading. So it is important to develop yourself as a person, to be that leader that others want to follow.
Well, I know in my past, I've done workshops and seminars and stuff on self-leadership. So beyond just, you know, the fact you've got somebody in front of you, you know, it's like, you know, you've got to, it was always that thing where they, it's like when you're pointing a finger, you got four more pointing back at you and you got one point now. So,
right.
Make sure
exactly.
You're pointing in the right direction here for that. So let's get started. Let's talk about the rare leadership. How did that, it's from based on a book, right?
Yes. Rare leadership. It's also Christian based, but it's, you know, you can teach it secular or Christian, kind of like John Maxwell's material as well. If you really study it, a lot of it is Christian-based. It's just not all the scriptures all over it. But it's through the Thrive Ministries and Deeper Walk International. And so this has rare leadership has to do, one component of it is mainly about relationships. So the RARE is actually an acronym. And so it's RARE. And the first R has to do with remain relational. And it's about always keeping the relationship bigger than the problem. And once again, it's about connecting with the person and understanding what the relationship and what's going on. And A in RARE has to do with act like yourself. So learning, that's actually has to do with maturity because one of the things is, you know, like what are you like? What is it like to be you when you're doing well? So like when you get triggered, how do you remain still your true self and not get triggered to where then you might say something hurtful or do something that's out of your character? And so there's skills that you can learn how to act like yourself and remain yourself, and that's maturity skills. And the other thing was, it has to do with emotional maturity. And the next R in RARE has to return to joy. And so many times, you know, life happens and you might get stuck out there in some of the, you know, emotions of life, whether it's sadness or shame or disgust or hopeless despair. And so how do you return to joy when life happens, you know, when there's a loss? It could even be in business. It could be like where you're, you know, your company, you know, is not doing well and you're in the red or you lost a big account. You know, it's like those kind of things that happen in life. You get hit hard with them. It affects your life, your family. So what happens is how do you return to joy in the midst of those upsetting emotions? And then the last E in RARE has to do with endure hardship well. And so learning how to endure the different seasons in our life and different things that come our way and how to return to joy in the midst of that. So that's kind of what the acronym RARE stands for. And so through RARE leadership, what it is, it's learning these different skills of how to return to joy and how to act like your true self. And mainly it's emotional maturity. And one of the things that they have found, like even in leadership, is that, you know, people get promoted, people start a business, and all of a sudden now they're having to deal with people. And you might mm-hmm. be really good at your skill, but all of a sudden now you're working with people, and maybe you lack in the emotional maturity and the leadership skills that you need to grow people. That's a whole nother area of growth other than just your skill of what you're good at doing. So RARE leadership has to do more with brain science, like the left side of the brain is more about problem solving and results, and the right side of the brain is more about relational skills. And one of the things is that you need both. We do need to get our work done. We do need to produce, and we do need to get certain things handled. But the thing is, with RARE leadership, it teaches you how to keep the relationships bigger than the problem. So it's more of a team effort. It's about keeping people working with you and happy to be with you. And so one of the things with left brain is that they're more about, you know, the bottom line, getting it done. But they might hurt the team, or they might not build a team up. And so being aware of those things is really important, because you do want to get the work done. But again, you want to keep the relationship bigger than the problem, versus people that are more left brain, they keep the problems bigger than the relationship. All they care about is getting the work done. Whereas someone that has developed the skills on the right side of the brain, they create a group more like a team effort, like how can we get this done? They engage the team. So it's not just they're the top or they're the head. It's more like bringing out the creativity in others, causing an environment of belonging, like, you know, this is who we are. This is where we're going as a team. This is our vision, and how can we accomplish that? So that's kind of a little bit of the brain science part of it. But there's a lot more to it. It's just wanted to give you a little snapshot.
It's very cool. Yeah, it's very cool. I love to talk about how joy is a fuels, you know, when it comes to with the brain and all that, what joy really can bring to that. When it's here, it's talking about returning to joy. You know, what are some of the benefits of being able to utilize that in leadership?
Well, joy is a fuel, just like fear. Like, you could either be motivated by fear and get things done, or you could be motivated by joy. So when you're motivated by fuel, you focus more on the problems, whereas when you're motivated by joy, you focus more on solutions. And when you're motivated by fear, that causes a lot more anxiety, whereas joy, you have more of an appreciation and a thanksgiving for your team, for the vision, for where you're going. Fear is fuel, that you're more irritable and you complain more, whereas when you have joy as a fuel, you have more energy for problem solving, whereas with fear as fuel, you end up being more, you avoid responsibility or you shift the blame. And when you have joy as fuel, there's always a lot more energy, and you kind of share the victories and you share the losses. You take responsibility for, like, oh my gosh, you know, this month we didn't do so good, so how can we do better this next month? But again, you share it with the team instead of blaming. And fear is fuel is very exhausting. And whereas joy is fuel, you know, it's more energetic. Like, if you're happy to go to work, when you focus on your team and that it's a teamwork, and your team feels like, man, I have a sense of belonging, like, man, we're working on this project and I'm so excited we're going to get this out, there is joy in that. And that makes people want to come and work with you. They want to come and be creative with you. and they're not fear-based, like, oh my gosh, if I share this, he might not like it or she might not like it. So they kind of don't share their creativity, whereas when you create an environment and a culture of belonging and their identity is, man, I'm part of this team, they tend to have much more creativity, much more joy, therefore they're much more productive.
Hmm. That sounds great. So, and when looking at the rare leadership, it has it on here that there's four uncommon habits for increasing trust, joy, and engagement in the people you lead. So that's very
mm-hmm.
intriguing. You know, why are they so uncommon?
Well, I think because they're uncommon because, like, we remain relational. Usually, keeping a relationship bigger than a problem, many times when you have a problem, you just want to fix the problem
mm-hmm.
at all costs. And when you're having to develop the skills of keeping the relationship bigger than the problem, then you seek to understand versus trying to be right. So you engage the person in the conversation and you want to have them, you want to understand them. Like, okay, help me understand. Versus, you know, my way or the highway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's skills that don't come naturally sometimes. Maybe for some, for few there do. If you have a lot of emotional maturity, you may have some of these skills, but you can always improve on them. Act like yourself. For instance, when something or someone says something, do you get triggered? Do you react or do you respond? So these are all skills like where they're all about relationships. So the act like yourself, it's before I react and tout and yell or get upset or say something I'm going to regret, I will think first about the value of the relationship, whether it's a work
mm-hmm.
relationship, a spouse or a child. It's more based on relationship. And so that's why they're rare, for instance, because we tend to react more. If you get triggered, if someone says something, our natural bend is to defend ourselves. And then learning to endure hardship well is another rare habit. So the four rare things that they're talking about there is the RARE, and learning to return to joy in the midst of different hardships that we go through. So that's also another skill, learning to return to joy. And a lot of it, we call them RCs, like relational circuits. Relational circuits, it's you can actually know when your relational circuits are on or off. And these are skills that you can learn through the, I teach different workshops, and one of them is Joyful Journey. Another one is Rare Leadership. And you learn these actual relational skills that help you become a better person in all aspects of your life. And so that's kind of what the RARE stands for. One of the things that they found recently is that there's been a paradigm shift in the way leadership is going. Because one of the things is, like, in the old years ago, gosh, this is like 400 years ago, one of the things is that
mm-hmm.
the paradigm shift back then was that reason plus choice equals transformation. And the
mm-hmm.
thing with that, though, is that that has to do more with accountability. And one of the things, like, for instance, they have found that accountability doesn't always work because of the fact that, like, say, one example would be, like, when I want to lose weight, you know, many times I'll fear the scale. Like, if I'm with a group, I'll show up if I know I lost some weight. If I didn't lose weight, I'll probably want to back off and not go because of the accountability.
You'll get
ice cream. More with accountability. Yeah. And so
yeah.
they have found that that doesn't really cause transformation. That they have found that what does do sustainable. So what I like to work with is more sustainable transformation, not just like for a period of short time, but like a lifetime, a lifestyle of transforming. And the right brain paradigm shift is that it's belonging plus identity equals transformation. So like if this is my group of people, and they, I can be myself, I know they're going to accept me the way I am. They're going to encourage me, and I don't have to perform. I don't have to be a certain way to feel like I belong with you and with this group. And so when you feel a sense of belonging and like you could just be your true self, think about the closest people that you, the closest people to you, the people that you know you could be vulnerable with. You know you could tell them anything you want. They say that the definition of joy is happy to be with you. So, like, say when you're going to go meet a friend at Starbucks or something or at a cafe, and the minute you see them, you light up. You know, you're just, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad, happy to see you. That's like belonging. That's like, oh, my gosh, I know that you are my friend, and I know I can tell you, and I could be vulnerable, and you're still going to love me. You're still going to accept me. That kind of relationship opens more of a space for transformation than a performance relationship where you're having to act a certain way and having to be accountable for your action. Even like, say, for instance, you know, AA, NA, all those different anonymous groups, one of the things that I believe causes a lot of the transformation there is because they have a group that they belong to. You know, it's like people that understand them, people that can encourage them, people that understand where they've been. And that alone, when they feel like, oh, my gosh, you understand me and, you're, you know, you're here for me, you're going to encourage me, that causes transformation. And
well,
that
yeah.
helps a person.
Yeah, the, so, I mean, just we've talked about that before on the show about just how important going into any kind of counseling like that, whether it's codependency or if, whether, you know, you are the addict, really getting into a place where you could be vulnerable with a group and they're vulnerable with you. Like you're saying, wow, that's the most powerful connections you can make with anybody because you're being
it
real
is.
And authentic and you're being able to share your pain and your confusion trying to process something that you're wanting to get past. And other people within the group have shown you that they have, and they can help you to, you know, in a walk in a way that can help you to, you know, see in a new perspective that can help you to, you know, have a better life.
Yeah, and you know what? We live in a world where, you know, there is a lot of pain, a lot of hardship. And one of the things that that affects us as well as individuals is life's traumas. I mean, there's different kinds of trauma in life. And, for instance, I was raised, most of us have been raised, or some of us have been raised in dysfunctional families. And one of the things, the way in my family, being raised in my family, because of the different types of abuse, I was extremely quiet, extremely shy, extremely introverted. And I remember at age 19 going to this one group, and like I told you, personal growth development started for me at that age. I went to this group, and this one group that I belonged to, it was a home fellowship group, and in there, because these people accepted me the way I was so shy, and I had no voice. I mean, I felt so worthless and had no value, and it was really hard for me to speak, but because they accepted me and let me be myself, and I felt safe there, that's another thing, is being around safe people, I was able to be myself and began to speak. And because they accepted me just the way I was, eventually I was able to heal from different life traumas and be able to have a voice. And that's one thing too, is like sometimes life traumas can keep you stuck, and they still can affect you even in the present as an adult. And so many times you do have to take a look at those things and grow through those things that may have happened in your life. If you had, there's two types of trauma. One is trauma A and the other one's trauma B. And so trauma A is usually the bad stuff that happens to us, you know, like physical, sexual, verbal abuse. And it can stunt our maturity and keep someone stuck many times because we're just trying to hide things. And then the other trauma is trauma B. So trauma A is absence of the good stuff. So the way to remember it is trauma A is the absence of the good stuff that we need but did not get, for instance, at the appropriate times in life. So if say there was neglect or say there was, you know, you weren't cared for well, the thing is those things cause trauma And they always say it's harder to know what you went without than, you know, it could have been lack of affection. And the thing is, whereas like trauma B is the way to remember that one is the bad stuff that happens to you. So there's two different types of traumas that affect us and can affect us even in our present. And those are worth looking at times if you feel like, God, why is it that I still always get triggered with this? You know, why do I always get affected by this? And it might be something just, you know, look at it. Check, you know, they say, you know, one of the things is the begin to transform is to reflect and become aware of things and then take a look at them instead of run from them and see what it is. It's kind of like discovery.
I can just imagine it's that subconscious thing that you don't even know that's running in the background that once you realize that, it's literally can unwind the whole thing to where you just really totally feel like you're a different person. So we got about 4.5 minutes left, so I want to make sure that we talk about the envelope conversation because,
was
something that I really took away from when I met you and we talked about it. It's just such a profound yet simple thing that I want to make sure that we share that with everybody.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I love working a lot is with relational skills and helping people to improve their relationships. And one of the things, so I usually like giving tips or tools. And one of them, the tip on keeping the relationship bigger than the problem, there's a tool called the envelope conversation that can really help with that. So the guidelines for an envelope conversation is this. Number one is first you keep the relationship bigger than the problem, but you say I have a problem. What you want to do with that person is you first lead with the history and the importance of that relationship with you. Okay, so like this person means so much to me that you validate that person. And then the second thing, you address the problem. And the third is you invite them into a win for everyone that strengthens the relationship moving forward. So I wanted to, I'll share an example. Would you like me to share a business example or a personal example, like a
Let's do personal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, personal would be, okay, so my son is a music composer, and he writes music for like Netflix, Disney, Warner Brothers, Digital Camera, and different big companies, does a lot with National Geographic. And one of the things is one of his films was up for an award, so this is how the conversation went. So my son called me to inform me that he was booking flights to go to England, because one of his films he had composed was being nominated for a music award at the music awards being held in Bristol, England at the time. So he asked me if I could care for my grandkids, my granddaughter's 4 and my grandson was 1 at the time, for 5 days while he and his wife were out of the country. Okay. So that's a little bit of history just so that you know. But my response was this. I'm validating him. So like the number one, you start with the history. Son, I'm so happy for you that your work is being nominated for this music award. I am one of your greatest supporters and so proud of you and your work. You know I love my grandkids and that I am there for them to help the kids in any way that I can. Then I said, I have to say that I am uncomfortable with caring for the kids, especially my grandson who's only 1 year old, being away from his mom for that duration of time. I am concerned of him experiencing detachment pain, being separated from his mom since he was so young. And then I told him that I had gone to a conference where I heard Dr. Carl Lehman. He's a brain neurologist, and he said that there was different testimonies being shared about people my age now that were affected as young children from detachment pain and being separated from their parents or their mom, especially at such a young age. So then my son tells me, so are you making this decision based on fear? And I said, no, I'm making my decision based on brain science and psychological facts. I asked him to discuss the situation, and so he did. He discussed it with his wife, and my son came back to me telling me that him and his wife had decided that while the kids were young, one or the other parent would always stay home with them. And so my son booked his flights, went to the awards by himself, and my daughter-in-law later called me saying thank you. She thanked me for loving her kids so much and doing what was best for them. And my response to her was validating her, what a great mom she is. And So that's an example of, like, you know, you start with the history and the value of that relationship is to you. You address the problem, and then you come up with a win-win for everybody. And so their decision was to remain, one or the other would always remain home when they had to go on a trip like that. So that's an example of an envelope conversation. So once again, it's keeping the relationship bigger than the problem. And always start with the history of the relationship importance to you. Number two is address the problem. And then number three is invite them into a win-win. So that's a great tool for any problem that you're addressing.
I think that's such a good model. And, you know, a part of it, of course, is going to be practicing. Practice makes perfect. But to have that concept. And I love the whole idea that, you know, you make the relationship more important than anything else that's going on. And boy, that usually when there's an argument or just any kind of a confrontational thing, that usually flies out the window.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, this is what we're talking about. Like, no, we're what we're talking about. Yeah. So I think that's so important, so important. Well, 30 minutes has already gone by. Boy, it's super fast. And all this information, I could talk to you for 2 hours, girl. It's such a great conversation. But I really want everybody to know about how to be able to get a hold of you. So what's a good contact number for you?
Phone number? My phone number is 951-454-3113. And then you could always visit my website, freetobelifecoach.com. And, you know, you could learn more about the different workshops and the different services that I provide.
Yeah, she's got all kinds of great programs, whether it's personal, about parenting skills, getting groups together, and just teaching the envelope conversation. Gosh, imagine a whole office that went and practiced this on a regular basis and how profound that would be for just communication, being able to problem solve all the time. It would be just totally great. So thank you. Thank you, Blanca, so much. This has been awesome.
Well, thank you, Robin, for having me. It was great. I know I tried
to
give a lot of
information. Yeah, we'll have to have you back with another topic.
Okay.
I hope you come back and we'll talk about another one. I'll get my sister Amy's normally on the call too, but she wasn't able to be on tonight. So we'll have to have you come back on when we can have Amy a part of the conversation. She's got a degree in spiritual psychology, so I'm sure the two of you could have a really, really lively conversation.
Oh, thank you.
It'll be really lively. Yeah. So, again, anybody wanting to get a hold of Blanca, please give her a call, and it's 951-454-3118. And, again, I always want to thank my international audience just for checking out the cafe, scooting at the table, and being part of our conversations. Any questions that you have or want any more further information that you need to have with Blanca, go ahead and give us a call, and we'll see you next time here at the cafe. Have a great week.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.